you know, when you come across a problem, which is pretty much every day, you know, you're able to use those kind of skill sets and that kind of thinking power to really get around different problems. And I think that, you know, if you really look at some of the big players and, you know, some of the major CEOs, you know, if you look at their interviews, you know, that's kind of what they have. And that's what's really, you know, I feel valuable.
That was Amit Shah from the AITSolution.com, 20-year-old entrepreneur, joining us here on the Dumb Teacher Podcast. My name is Kenneth Allen Morris. Thank you for joining me on the Dumb Teacher Podcast. You may hear some background noise, but I just am going to go with it. I hope it's not too bad. I have the ATR-2100, the Audio-Technica mic. It seems to do a pretty good job of just picking up my voice. Amit, he it's kind of mind-blowing. The kid, he started his own kind of computer repair business when he was 16, I think, company. He's in New York. Then he built it to something a little bit different. He's now going to school at Pace University in New York in, business marketing administration. And he already is the CEO of a, if it's not there yet, it's becoming a multi-million dollar business from what I can tell. I didn't ask him numbers, and maybe I'll get those from him some other time. But I hope you enjoy this. A lot of little golden nuggets here from a very young entrepreneur. Hope you enjoy. Thanks. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine. How you doing?
Perfect, perfect. How are you doing today? I'm doing good.
Pretty good.
All right, that's good to hear. Sorry about that.
Nah, that's no problem. And just so I want to make sure I pronounce your name right, is it Amit Shah?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep, that's good spelling.
Excellent.
Yep.
So, yeah, I've been reading up on you, and I forget how I found you. I don't know if I found you through Facebook. I'm guessing that's how I find a lot of people.
Yeah.
But you have a really pretty awesome story. I think it's an awesome story. So
thank you. I appreciate it.
I guess I'd like to get right into it, but I'd like to probably just small talk a little bit. What's the weather like where you are right now in New York?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's actually surprisingly not that bad today. You know, it's been pretty cold like last couple of days, especially Thanksgiving. But today it was like 60 degrees actually, so it was really surprising.
That is crazy.
Yeah,
winter. Did you get hit by any of the large amount of snow like Buffalo? Or are you in a total?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, like, Buffalo is definitely more upstate. They got a lot more snow than we did. We got a little snow. We got maybe, like, 4 or 5 inches, but nowhere near to what Buffalo got.
Yeah, they had, like, 4 feet or something ridiculous.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was insane, yeah.
Where in New York are you? Are you, like, New York City?
Yeah, I'm in New York City, exactly, yep.
I've been there once, but it was a connecting flight, so it was, like,
okay.
In and out. I didn't see a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Where are you from?
I'm in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Oh, nice. Okay. Awesome. That's interesting.
Yeah. It's, you probably know it's the smallest town with an NFL team.
Yeah.
The town itself is 100,000 people. So it's.
Right. Wow. That's crazy. That's insane.
It is. And, you know, people come from New York expecting something, you know, expecting a city.
Have a high expectation.
Yeah. And there's not, it's pretty flat. There aren't many buildings, and downtown has, you know, a handful of bars, and
right.
it's weird. So
that's funny.
Yeah. I'd love for you to just start by, you know, wait, did you get the questions I sent out?
Yes. Yes.
While
I did.
Okay. Good. Good. I never remember if I sent them right after or if I sent them later. So I guess first start off, Amit, tell us kind of your story. Well, how old are you right now?
Yeah, I'm actually 20 right now.
You're 20 right now. When you started all this, you were like 16, 17.
Yeah, when I say 16.
Because you could really tell your life story, and it wouldn't be all that long because you're a young guy. You're a young guy. So go ahead and tell us what led you to where you are now.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess, you know, I'll start from, like, you know, where, you know, I first started and, like, you know, how, you know, I started or came up with the concept of AIT. So, you know, when I was, like, really young, you know, I was the type of kid, you know, who, you know, really didn't give a damn, especially about school and, you know, call it a good thing or a bad thing. But, you know, I really think that was the reason why, you know, I am where I am today. And, you know, I'm not, you know, some big millionaire yet, but I think that, you know, we're definitely, you know, on the way of, you know, we have, you know, we've been able to quadruple our revenue in the last year, and that's definitely been a very exciting thing to see. So, you know, when I was really young, you know, it was really interesting because, you know, a lot of people always told me, you know, if I don't do well in school, you know, I really have to do well this, you know, this year. And if I don't, you know, all these bad things are going to happen. And, you know, people really just, you know, always just saw me, you know, not as just somebody as somebody who really hated school, or maybe somebody, I think it was just perceived very differently. You know, I was, as you know, people just thought at some points, you know, I was just incapable and wasn't able to, you know, do well in school. And, you know, the truth was that, you know, it wasn't that I wasn't able to. It's just I chose not to do well.
Right.
And I think one of those reasons was because I really enjoy technology. You know, I would go home, quote unquote, sick, you know, a lot. And, you know, and that was reason. And the reason for that was because I wanted to just play with technology. I didn't really necessarily care about, you know, what it was I was learning about in school, just because, you know, I often didn't see the value of it. You know, a lot of the skills you really need in life, you know, are, you know, what you learn when you're younger. It's not that, you know, for example, you know, in my opinion is, you know, after seventh grade, I really don't think that, you know, there's a lot of the skills you really need. I mean, you know, just from, for example, like, you know, there's, you know, I'm in college right now, right? I'm in junior year. And, you know, we're learning, you know, calc, right? Calculus. And
right.
I see no logic behind needing to learn that. Sure, you know, it might be a great skill to have if you're the type of person who wants to learn and learn and learn, but I really don't see how that is really needed in the life of a business person. You know, I mean, like, you have advisors and you have people around you who are smarter than you who know those things. And even then, I really don't think they need calculus to figure these things out. So, you know, it's like, you know, that's just a prime example. And, you know, that's a whole other topic itself. But, you know, I was just as somebody, you know, who I really had my mindset as to, you know, what I wanted to do. When I was younger, I had no clue about what the future was. I had no clue, you know, what I would be here. And, you know, I was just somebody who wanted to just tinker and play with technology. But, you know, I think that things really changed. And, you know, I'm really grateful. You know, my dad used to own a hotel when I was younger. And, you know, I used to spend a lot of time there. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I really got out of that experience was, you know, two things, right? Number one, my dad used to own a hotel. That's, you know, a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
And number two was, you know, I think that, you know, I really got to learn all the different aspects of a business, right? What goes into it. Sure, you know, the different aspects of a hotel business versus a technology company are two different things, but, you know, the basics and the principles are very same, right? So that was kind of really cool to see, you know, as somebody who was really young, to be able to see, you know, my father run a business, and more importantly, you know, for me to, you know, really learn the different sides of the business. So, you know, I would follow around the different people, right, that were in charge. So, for example, I followed around the housekeeper, the executive housekeeper, and, you know, for a really long time. And
yeah.
Thank God, you know, my career didn't end there. But, you know, after that, I started following around, like, the IT guy and the maintenance guy. And surprisingly, you know, a lot of my time went towards following around the maintenance guy rather than the IT guy, which is kind of ironic. But, you know, I really was somebody, you know, who really enjoyed learning a lot about technology and solving problems. And I think that's kind of why I really enjoyed following around those two, you know, guys. So what happened was, you know, there would be all these technology problems, you know, that would always be happening, of course, you know, in every business that happens.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just really interesting because, you know, I was able to fix these problems because at home, you know, I would just play with technology and I would just, you know, I would do whatever, you know, I would call tech support. I would stay on the phone with them for hours and hours and hours. And, you know, when they got tired of me and when they would hang up, I would just, I would call somebody else. You know, I would call the same company. Again, I would call Dell again, and then I would just, you know, make sure it was a different representative. Or if it was the same rep, you know, I would just make sure that, you know, I use a different name. And, you know, it was just really funny because, like, you know, generally these companies, they generally tend to help you only if you have warranty, right?
Right.
So what I did was all the computers at my dad's, you know, hotel were had warranty, right?
Yeah.
So there was a number of computers there, of course, right? So what I would do is I would just write down all the service tag numbers.
Nice.
And I would just, you know, go one by one by one, one by one by one. And, you know, that was a long list. So that, you know, that definitely kept me pretty busy. So, you know, that's what I did. And then, like,
so
eventually, yeah,
you,
go ahead.
You, that's actually pretty genius. You basically learned about the technology, learned about those certain computers by calling tech support and getting them on the line. And
yeah.
Did you make up problems or did you
Yeah,
did you,
yeah.
Did you troubleshoot?
No, no, no.
Okay.
Yeah, I made up different scenarios. Like, you know, for example, I remember very clearly, like, this is one of the scenarios I made up. So, I said, hey, listen, I'm trying to set up this, you know, Active Directory, which is, you know, what you set up on a server when you have, you know, a bunch of workstations.
I know a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yep, exactly. So, you know, that's what you do to when you have, like, you know, a bunch of workstations and when you're sharing resources from a server.
Yeah.
So I said, hey, listen, I'm trying to do this, but I'm really not able to, you know, I'm not sure what's going wrong. You know, I would say what I did, I had some ideas of starting points, right, from Google or, like, you know, YouTube videos or whatever.
Right.
But then, you know, I would get lost in the process, right? So, you know, I said, hey, listen, I did this, and, you know, I'm really getting lost here, so I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong, but, you know, hey, if you can help me, that'd be really awesome. And, you know, I said, I know I'm under warranty because, you know, I'm with a business and, you know, I really hope you can help.
Wow.
So, you know, they said, hey, yeah, you know, so this is what we have to do. So, you know, I would go through those examples, right? And then, you know, I would just think of, you know, different scenarios, right? Different examples of, you know, different things would go wrong, right? So I would ask lots of questions. And, you know, this would go on for like a really long time. And because, you know, at this point, I cared more about this than my actual homework. So I considered this my homework.
Yeah.
So, you know.
You're almost getting tutored. I mean,
right.
You had like a professional tutor.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
That's hilarious.
Know, yeah. So I just continued doing that, right? And, you know, long story short, you know, that went on for a pretty long time, actually. And, you know, I learned a lot, actually, from that. It was really surprising as to how much, you know, you can really learn just from, you know, two things, right? Making up, you know, different scenarios. And number two, and the first thing is, you know, starting out with, you know, a certain type of problem and, you know, asking somebody for help along the way. And it's actually pretty fun because, you know, I would even ask, like, you know, one of my uncles is in the IT field. So sometimes I would ask him as well. And, you know, one of my family friend's friend, he's also in the IT field as well. So I used to ask him as well. So, you know, it was actually pretty funny because, you know, I would come across these problems and I'd find a way to, you know, fix him. And then, you know, sometimes I didn't always, you know, find the solution to every problem. But it definitely, you know, gave me a great understanding of how the technology / troubleshooting field works. So, you know, that helped a lot, actually. And, you know, that's actually a really useful skill, especially in business, because, you know, when you come across a problem, which is, you know, pretty much every day, you know,
right.
You find, you know, you're able to use those kind of skill sets and that kind of thinking power to really get around different problems. And I think that that's actually a pretty big skill. And I think that, you know, if you really look at, you know, some of the big players and, you know, some of the major CEOs, you know, if you look at their interviews, you know, that's kind of what they have. And that's what's really, you know, I feel valuable rather than, you know, learning marketing 101 in class, in school, you know, so that's what I really look at. And, you know,
right.
That's actually, you know, really useful.
Yeah. And, that is what a lot of those head CEOs say and do. They hire the right people. They don't do everything. They hire the right people who
exactly.
have the knowledge. And I mean, now you have I'm sure you have a really pretty good background on it. And then
yeah.
you know who to hire. You know what to
right.
look for in someone else.
Yeah, definitely.
So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, that's what's really, you know, important, I feel, you know, in running a business, whether, you know, you're running, you know, a business that's doing $500,000 or you're running a business that's doing, you know, $500 billion.
Right.
But, you know, that's kind of, you know, what I feel is the common thread between people who run successful companies. But, you know, either way, right, I mean, that's one thing that I've really seen over time. You know, so most people, you know, generally tend to start companies after they graduate. But, you know, what I feel, you know, and I feel, I mean, I'm really fortunate for this, is that I've been able to, you know, start a company that's, you know, doing quite well in, you know, before college, right? So that experience has definitely been much more valuable than I have, you know, seen in college. So, you know, during freshman year, you know, sophomore year, people have been saying though, you know, by the time you get your junior year, you know, you'll start seeing, you know, the benefits of, you know, college. And, you know, I'm in my junior year and I'm, you know, almost done with, you know,
right.
I'm halfway done with my junior year, but yeah, I really don't see it yet. And, you know, of course, people continue to say, oh, yeah, senior year. So I'm waiting for senior year to come around. And, you know, the day I learn something, I'll feel like I've seen a return on the crazy amount of money that my parents are spending for me on tuition.
Where are you going to school?
I actually go to Pace University in New York City.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what are you studying?
I study business administration.
Nice.
With a concentration in entrepreneurship. Hence,
you know, exactly, yeah. Well, I imagine, with being in your junior year now, you're probably getting into more specific courses.
Yeah.
As opposed to your first, you know, first and second year. So is it a pretty powerful thing to walk into a class on entrepreneurship and be like, well, yeah, when I started my company 4 years ago, blah, 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 you know, what
yeah.
kind of experience do you then, you know, bring to the class?
Yeah, so what I tend to do is, you know, so in the original, so when I first, when the first classes first started, I really don't tend to tell anybody, especially professors, that, you know, I have a technology company or I have experience in the business field. I feel like, most students, tend to know just because, the word, words really travel, right? But I mean, right. I don't know. I mean, I try to keep the professors and, I make them think I'm a typical student, who's just trying to get by. But, and the reason I do that is because I'm really fascinated how, they can stand up there and they can say one thing and then, what the reality is like is completely different. And it's just so interesting. But, when I feel like I'm gonna, my grades are starting to slip, I start bringing these things up and, I say, oh, hey, it's a real honor to be in your class and, I'm learning a lot and, all that stuff kind of stuff. So, that's when I really bring it up. But hey, as long as they don't hear this interview, I'm okay. But, it's definitely very interesting. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think if I was a professor and I had to stand up there and I had to say, the things they do, I don't think I could sleep at night. I think it's easier to, steal a client from a competitor. But, standing up in the classroom and, telling all these people, what they are teaching, I think it's just, yeah. I don't know, I could never do that. I think it's crazy.
It's a lot of it's theory if it's not in practice.
It is. Absolutely. So, to a certain point it's useful, but, that is really, I just think the colleges are so overpriced and, that's one of the biggest problems I have with it, right? So I'm going to be the kid who graduates and doesn't have to worry about a dollar in loans because my parents, just take care of the entire thing, right? But not everybody is in that position, right?
Right.
So the problem I have is that, for example, right, and this is real life example. Kids that are in the entrepreneurship program at Pace University, right, they're going to graduate, right, with an insane amount of money in loans, right? But when they go to start their business, they're not going to be able to get a loan because they already have their loans, which is backlogged from school. Right? And more importantly, even if they do get their loans, right, for starting their business or get venture capital money or whatever kind of money, friends and family, whatever it is, right? The problem is that they'll have such all this theory that, it's going to be so hard for them to, get into, a good position with their business. So, I'm not saying that, when I started my business, we started making all this money, but, sure, we went through, a cycle of failure and, messing up and all these things, but when we started to scale and when we really started to grow, that was from the experience, that I went, learning from failure to failure. And it wasn't necessarily from, reading a textbook, So that's the main problem I have with it. And, hey, if the college tuition was, lowered by, maybe 1,000%, then that'd be fine. I would have no problem with it. Hey, at the end of the day, college is a great experience. You learn a lot by, interacting with friends and you really have a great social life, and that's kind of why I'm in school. But that's all different. But that's kind of what I really think of it, and I think it's just really it's insane how much people pay for college. And in my opinion, if you were to take that money and invest into a business, I think that you'll be much more successful than you would in college. And people might call me a hypocrite for saying that because I am in college and I do have a business, but I mean I think that there's a lot that goes into it. And I don't think it's as simple as it sounds.
Yeah. There's definitely – it's not a one-track way, and I think
right.
I think college is forced on a lot of people from
exactly
as early as kindergarten. What do you want to be when you grow up? And, I mean, I did go to college, and I still have debt, and I wish I would have known differently because I was the first one out of my family to go to college and graduate, which was, something I'm proud of. But then, it's not – that's not all –
Yeah.
Like you said. And I know that some countries, I think it was, I want to say Finland.
Mm-hmm.
Finland or Denmark, where they have free healthcare.
Yes.
College is paid for through,
I believe Australia is like that as well. I think if it's not completely free in Australia, I believe that there is a huge subsidy that the government offers. And they definitely, and I know it's not as crazy as the United States is.
It is. It's weird how backwards we are in a lot of different things like mortgages on houses too. It's just backwards. You end up paying three times what you pay for the house because you're paying, 3% or 4% annually.
Definitely.
So
absolutely.
Tell us about AIT.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got a feel for it. And I definitely know it's evolved from, it seemed like from what I read, it started as you kind of did computer repair and troubleshooting, and now you're moving into bigger things.
Yeah, so that's actually really impressive because most people don't realize or are able to follow that because, you know, most people think of technology, okay, technology, that's, you know, that's one business, right? But people don't understand that technology is kind of like medicine, right? In medicine, you know, you're not just a doctor, you specialize in specific areas, right? So yes, your money is right on the dot with that one. But so yeah, so we first started as a company that was offering, you know, IT services in like, you know, small things, right? Computer repair, like, you know, that kind of thing. So after the first year, you know, we made a really small profit, right? We realized, okay, you know, this is a really small business to be in, and it's going to be really hard to scale this business while being in college, right? Yep. Or in high school, right? So I realized, you know, what can we start doing? What can we start offering? And what, you know, what do I actually, you know, like doing outside of this field that can make actually generate some, you know, some real revenue, right? So we started doing, you know, a bunch of different types of things. We started doing like, you know, iOS, Android, and like, you know, web development. Right. So I found a really strong team, you know, that, you know, was really good at, you know, development. Right. So I formed a relationship with them and, you know, I would charge my customers, right, X amount of dollars and I would flip that and, you know, I would subcontract that work to a really strong team. Right. And that worked very well for a really long time. And, you know, that's kind of where I really started my business. And it's really funny because that's kind of where I really started making money. Right.
Yeah.
So. And it's really funny because, you know, most people think, oh, you know, you have to have startup cash, you know, you have to have all these different things to really make money, right? But it's really not about that because what happens is you have to be smart, you have to be strategic, you have to be able to, you know, work around different problems, right?
Yep.
So I realized, right, I'm sure I can find somebody who can give me money to start this business, but why take on that kind of investment, right, when you don't know what tomorrow is going to be like, especially since you're a college student, your time is limited, right?
Right.
So what I did was I said, okay, you know what, I'm going to find a team that, you know, is not only really good with their quality of their work and can develop and, you know, deliver work that meets my expectations, but on top of that, somebody who is willing to, you know, offer me a very competitive hourly rate so that way, you know, we can work in quantity, right? Because I wanted to have somebody who I can add markup onto.
Right.
So we did that, right? And then after that, this was really like, you know, last year and, you know, the year before that. And then after that, we really started to, you know, getting into a resource allocation. So now what we do is we hire resources and we put them on projects. So they're completely our resources. Now that we've, you know, been able to grow, we've been able to allocate that cash towards, you know, actual expansion and growth. So now this year, you know, it's been, you know, really interesting because what we do is we hire our own resources and we put them on projects. So for example, if there's a company that needs a, you know, web technology developer or needs a, you know, mobile app developer or, you know, a specific type of niche technology developer, you know, or, you know, business guy or whatever the resource might be, right? We, you know, find the appropriate resource, right? And we provide that resource to the different types of clients that need them. And, you know, that's been the real strategy for growth for us because the way it works is, you know, every recruiter you hire, you know, that you bring, right? They're kind of like sales reps, right?
Yeah.
Except, you know, they're, you know, full-time recruiters, right? So what we're really going to start to do this year is, you know, bring on recruiters. And the reason why that's really beneficial is because, you know, you set a quota for each recruiter. If they don't bring X amount of dollars in revenue, right, you get rid of them. Because they're at that point, they're dead weight, right? Even if they're bringing you $300,000 in revenue, right, or whatever, I mean, that's just, you know, that's kind of low, right? So you want to really have a quota that each recruiter has to, you know, make this much. And if they can, then they can stay. If they can't, they lose a seat at the table. That's just how it works. And, you know, one of the things that I've really learned, and, you know, I think I've become really good at this, is screening people, right? So when you hire recruiters or sales reps or anybody in the marketing field, really, right, what you really want to look at and what you really want to see if they're good at is, you know, if they have the fire in them. That's really what you want to look for. You know, when people, you know, 'cause, you know, in marketing, one of the things that you're going to go through a lot is rejection after rejection, right?
Right.
So one thing that we really look for is, you know, we look to see if, you know, this candidate has been able to handle rejection and if he's been able to go through every door, right, through the same level of enthusiasm he had from the day he knocked on door one to the day he knocked on door 1,000, right?
Right.
That's really important for us. So that's what we really look at. And, you know, the marketing people who we hire have, you know, really strong enthusiasm is, you know, the guys that end up succeeding. So, you know, that's kind of what we look for. And just, you know, it's really important to look at candidates, not just at their resume or, you know, where they graduated, but what experience they have, what real world experience they have, and more importantly, you know, what they can deliver versus
right.
what they're saying they can.
So someone who's okay with rejection is a good example, I think, because you're going to get a lot of no's with all kinds of sales.
Absolutely.
I was going to ask you, So do you do like software as a service?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we focus on software development. So we do, you know, iOS, Android, Python, Ruby on Rails, Java, PHP, .NET, you know, all the web technologies languages. And of course, mobile languages. We have marketing resources. We have business intelligence resources. We have, you know, big data, predictive analytics, and so on and so forth. So what we primarily do is we put our resources on projects, right? So I'm sure, you know, like, you know, different companies that do resource allocation. So what that means is, you know, for example, if there's a client that needs a, you know, resource that does, you know, like, let's just say, you know, data analysis, right, for example, then what we would say is, okay, we would learn their requirements, and then after we learn their requirements of what type of resource they need, we would put out one of our resources that matches that requirements on that project. So that resource now works, you know, 40-hour weeks or 30-hour weeks, whatever, you know, the client needs on that project.
Wow. That's really interesting, and I'm thinking ahead of, because I probably want some quotes from you on some things, on some projects, because it sounds like you really know what you're doing, and you really got a handle on.
Yeah, it's definitely very interesting. Yeah,
yeah.
Because one of the things that's what's really beneficial of resource allocation is that, you know, you don't have to manage the projects in-house, right? So when you don't have to manage the projects in-house, you can grow a lot quicker. You can. It's amazing how fast you can grow with the staffing model, right? So that's what's really been beneficial for us, because we can put these, you know, resources on projects, and, you know, generally, you know, it's either with, you know, the company, team directly, or it's with, you know, a small team or whatever the company size may be. But it's definitely very interesting because we work with a really wide range of types of clients. You know, we work with, you know, startups that are well-funded, to mid-sized companies, to a Fortune 500 companies. And, you know, it's just a really wide array of clients. And it's definitely, you know, very interesting to see, you know, these resources bring tremendous amount of value to the companies that, you know, they work with and, you know, that we retain as clients. So it's definitely very interesting.
Yeah. Do the teams... Are the teams together, or can they be? Because here's my thing. If I think could be a problem is if you have like a virtual team of five people who are all in different areas of the world. Let's say, how do you bring a project like that together, or are you outsourcing to, you know, like you said, startups or companies that have established teams that can say work on this mobile app project?
Yeah, great question. So what happens, you know, so we've done projects like, you know, where, you know, there has been a team, right, that's already been established, right, and then they need an additional resource or, you know, a couple additional resources, and that's where we come in, right? We give them those resources for the temporary project, right?
Okay.
And we've been in positions where, you know, we've provided a resource to a company that has had, like, you know, 20 different resources already on the project, and they've all been in different time zones, right? Or not all of them, but majority of them, right? And that is really interesting to see, you know, a team like that collaborate together, because what happens is, you know, they find a common hour where they do, like, you know, daily briefings, and they all brief each other, and the project manager gets briefed as well. But, you know, besides that, they all work on their time, and then, like, you know, they just come in together and brief each other together on as to where they are at, and, like, you know, they, you know, have a portal where they can collaborate and work together on the same project in the same place.
Right.
And that's really, you know, that's primarily what happens. But typically what happens is, you know, either if the client is, like, you know, in, you know, wherever the client is, right, whether it's New York City, another country, you know, in the middle of nowhere,
right,
you know, they usually have a team that's working in the office together. And 9 times out of 10, the client wants, you know, the resource to work in their office. And usually the other team members are in that same office as well. So, you know, that generally makes things easy to collaborate. But again, you know, some projects involve the resource to work completely remotely.
Right.
And, you know, that, you know, they just work on their own time, and then they collaborate with the team members remotely, and, you know, they update the project manager remotely as well. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, the team member is, you know, working, you know, half and half, right? So in the office, and sometimes they're working remotely the other half, right? So it depends on what the client requirements are and what the project calls for.
And I think that is becoming, first of all, it's becoming a lot less expensive to be able to do that, to collaborate.
Definitely.
I've been doing it. I did an online program through Full Sail in, you know, there in Florida, but I had people all over the country who were on my team, and it was different time zones, and we had to work together. And that was part of the coolness of the projects when we had work to do, is that we had to figure out how to get the work done and how to share it and how to,
you know. Absolutely.
So,
yeah. Definitely. Like, you know, it was really interesting because we actually just started a project where, you know, the client is actually based in the United States, but they have an office in Beijing, and then they also have an office in Russia, right? So it's actually really interesting because all three teams are collaborating together. So the U.S. team, the Beijing team, and then the office and the team in Russia is collaborating together. So it's definitely very interesting to see because, you know, not only are they working together, but, you know, there's translators involved and, like, you know, there's all this documentation that goes together. So it's definitely very cool. And it's actually really surprising how efficient they manage, you know, things to be. It's actually quite interesting because what happens is, you know, you know, we've worked with some, you know, clients who are not so, you know, realistic here, right? But I think that's actually really interesting. I feel like they're also a little bit more efficient than, you know, companies that are, you know, working in the United States. So it's actually really interesting to see that flow.
Yeah. What platforms are you using or do they use? Are they proprietary or are they like Google Hangouts or are they Skype?
They have, like, you know, every company uses, like, you know, use different things. Usually the client has a specific way, like, you know, they have, you know, set up through all their company, you know, through all their team members.
Yeah.
So, you know, some guys, you know, use, like, you know, the software through Microsoft, and, you know, sometimes they use, like, you know, Google Hangout or like Skype. Or if it's, you know, if it's more formal where, you know, like team executives are coming in, then they usually use, you know, their, like, you know, Office 365 platforms. So it just depends, like, on what the company is using. But our guys are pretty flexible, and, you know, they usually give a login credential account for, you know, whatever platform they're using to our resources, so that way they can log into whatever the system they currently have. And, you know, they don't necessarily have to shift to a whole new platform just for, you know, one resource.
Right. What do you think of all the, you know, I did some looking up on, because you were, in your area, you were named one of the top 40 entrepreneurs under 40, which, you know, you're way under 40. what do you think of the ability for entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs to build these startups that are multi-billion-dollar companies?
Yeah. So, like, you know, it's a really interesting topic because, you know, this is one that we always engage with, you know, with other developers or, like, you know, other team members, or, you know, it's something that we talk about a lot, right? So it's actually – okay, so, you know, this is the thing, right? Everybody grows up thinking, you know, you have to go to school, right? You go from, you know, first grade, second grade, third grade, and so on, right? After you do all that, you go to college. After you go to college, you find a job, right? So it's not that, you know, you can't do it at an earlier age. It's just that people tend to follow the system and, you know, follow the system to exactly what it is like. It's not that people think, oh, wow, you know, you started a business when you were 16. It's not that 16-year-olds can't start a business. It's not that at all. It's that everybody's trained to follow the system and the way the system is. So, you know, when people say, how did you start a business? I mean, I really didn't think of it to be a big deal because I don't want to say it was a fairly simple process, but it really wasn't like, okay, you know, you have to go through this, this. It wasn't really like that. It was just about, you know, establishing a business, and then, you know, the same way, you know, a successful business guy did it, it was the same way I did it. So I don't think it was really an involved process. It's just that people think it's kind of crazy because, you know, the majority of people don't do it, right?
Right.
And when majority of people don't tend to do it, that's when people think, oh, wow, that's really interesting, right? So, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, it's not, you know, it wasn't an easy process. It's just that, you know, people tend to follow the system a lot, and that's why it seems kind of like really like, you know, out there.
Yeah.
So I think if people start to, you know, stop following the rules and stop following the system and are willing to take risks, right? And if people can really come up with a good plan, you know, I'm not saying that plan's going to work, but, you know, it's definitely a step forward than, you know, following the system and graduating and, you know, getting paid an average salary. You know, I don't think I could do it in regards to following the system just because I wouldn't be happy. You know, I mean, people don't admit it, but, you know, money is wealth, and, you know, money is wealth, meaning money is power, right? So, you know, if you don't have a lot of money, you know, you're going to be under that system and for a very long time, right?
Yeah.
So I think that people need to really understand what, you know, money can do. And a lot of people don't like to admit it. You know, a lot of people say, you know, you can be happy without money, but it's really not true, right? I mean, one of the things that I want to do, and, you know, as somebody, you know, who, you know, hopefully one day is successful, is to be able to provide, you know, not only for my family, but for my parents and, you know, my sister and everybody, right? My eventual goal is to do two things, right? Number one, buy back the hotel that my dad owned, not just, you know, for the reason, money's not the reason, it's to be able to hold on to the memory of, you know, where I really started. And, you know, if I can start there, the guy next to me can also start there. And, you know, you can reach any level in life as well, right? That's the first thing, right? And the number two is to be able to give a credit card to my parents and to my sister and just say, hey, whatever you want to spend, spend it on this. I don't care what you spend it on, right? That's the ultimate thing and somebody successful who has a lot of money can do, right?
Yeah.
So it's not that, you know, entrepreneurs are chasing money. They're chasing two things, right? They're chasing their passion, right? And they're also chasing their desire of succeeding. That's what really drives entrepreneurs. You know, people keep saying, you know, money is not something you want to chase, and that's correct. You don't want to only be chasing money, but money should definitely be part of the goal, right? It should not be the entire goal, but it should definitely be a part of it.
I look at money as freedom.
It gives
you freedom of time, freedom of location.
Absolutely.
And scaling, being able to scale a business, what it sounds like you're doing is really what creates wealth.
Absolutely.
You know, and cash flow, you have, you know, whether it's real estate. I'm doing some work in real estate now, and it's just like, well, a hotel. That's on my list, too, eventually. I'd like to own a hotel, too. It's funny how, well, even that has changed, you know, being able to go and use an app to get Airbnb and get a place instead of a hotel.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is definitely something that, you know, that's definitely on my agenda of wanting to do. I really, you know, feel that, you know, it's important that people really understand of, you know, what entrepreneurship is and what exactly you can accomplish by becoming an entrepreneur, right? Because a lot of people, you know, everybody wants to become a millionaire, right? Or a billionaire, right? But it's about how you go about it, right?
Yeah.
So one thing that people don't understand is that, you know, it's not that you can't become it, right? And it's not that, you know, you can't. But if you really think about it, the number of people that actually go after it or actually, you know, try to pursue it is very low, right? So, you know, people say, you know, oh, I can't become a millionaire. I can't become a billionaire. But the question is why? Why can't you become that, right? And people really don't understand that, you know, it's not that you can't. It's just that the number of people that actually pursue it is really low, right? That's the thing.
Right. Well, and probably because they don't think they can, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And I know there's a number in my head. I don't know what the number is, but I know that you don't have to be a millionaire or a tenfold millionaire to be successful or to be happy or to be satisfied. It's like, I mean, almost if you have cash flow, a regular cash flow, and even better yet, a passive cash flow, you're going to be set. You're going to be happy. You're going to be successful.
Yeah, exactly.
To me, anyway.
I mean, like, it's just important. Exactly. And it's, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, you should be able to, you know, make a lot of money. I think that's really important just because, you know, you want to be able to provide, you know, for your family. You want to be able to give an awesome life, you know, to your kids, and you want them to be able to, you know, not have to ever worry about money. I think that that's really important, you know, as somebody, you know, who would grow up and eventually have kids. I think it's really important to be able to, you know, give that kind of life to your kids. You know, you don't want them to be, you know, spoiled or, you know, not understand what they have. But I think that there's definitely, you know, a point of, you know, where, you know, you should be able to put X amount of dollars in their account and, you know, in their bank account and never make sure, you know, they never have to worry about money even after you die, you know, and even if their kids and so on. So it's really important people understand. And, you know, I think that that's kind of one of the downfalls, you know, of this country. Everybody, you know, in school, right? You know, school, I mean, in my opinion, I think the school and the government is just, you know, it's kind of one thing. Because if you really think about it, right, what happens is in school, you know, they teach you how to become a wonderful employee, not
yes,
even great. They teach you how to become a wonderful employee.
Yeah.
And that's just – it really hurts me. I mean, I really cringe, you know, when I sit in class and, you know, when they teach you – when they tell you, you know, this is how you have to become a really good, you know, interviewing and all these things, right?
Yeah.
And it's just – it's such bullshit in my opinion. It's just – you know, it's crazy because, you know, I don't want to become an employee. I don't want to be a slave of a company. I want to do my own thing and I want to become – somebody who was very successful at that. I don't want to be able to thrive and, you know, bring my ideas to somebody, another company. That's not what I'm, you know, I don't feel that, you know, that's what my existence is for. And I think that people need to do the same thing. And I think that that's what's really going to contribute towards, you know, the greater being of humans.
Yeah, it's actually kind of ironic. I don't know if you know the history of education, but it was actually developed by... From what I understand anyway, I'm not, you know, 100% right on it, I'm sure. But from what I understand, education was, well, because early, I think it was late 1800s, early 1900s, when child labor laws came into effect, kids needed a place to go because they couldn't work anymore. So then workers, you know, factory companies needed people to work in those factories. So that's why there's this structure in school where you have classes that stop and start at certain times and they end at certain times. And it's roughly the same time that you'd be working at a factory.
Right.
And you sit down, you shut up and you do your work. And then, you know, when you get out, you can work in a factory and get you in the system, which is, you know, part of what you, kind of you're talking about is this,
right.
this system that is the rat race, I guess I call it
right.
the rat
yeah,
race.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it, yeah. And, you know, it's just, it's insane because, you know, like, for example, right, like, I mean, it's crazy because it's insanity because, you know, there's one class I'm taking, right? If you're 5 minutes late, right, you can't walk into the classroom, right? I think that's insane. How,
yeah.
If you're paying, right, $60,000 a year,
wow.
and if you walk in 2 minutes late, right, how is that? I think students should have the, you know, ability of firing, you know, professors, just because if you really think about it, right, you can fire your employees. I can fire my employees, right?
Right.
But how can you not fire a professor? You're paying them.
You're paying them
money.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think this is, it's a very interesting concept. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's really sad because people believe the system and people, you know, especially people who come from other countries, you know, they might be a little bit more sheltered. So, you know, they get really excited when they get, you know, a job offer, you know, at a really large company. But, you know, at the end of the day, they own you, right? And that's what's really sad. And I think people really need to understand that. And that would be definitely something I would like to really, you know, focus on as an entrepreneur and really help, you know, educate the community about that. And I think that's really important people understand.
Yeah. And back to the, I remember several times it came up on Shark Tank. They're talking about how much money they made from their businesses and then
absolutely.
How they were going to handle their children. And I don't remember if it was Kevin O'Leary or
Kevin O'Leary.
Yeah. Or,
yep.
or Mark Cuban or
yeah.
the other guy, but they were saying how they weren't going to just hand them over an account full of money because they felt that it wouldn't help them.
It wouldn't be just, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
yep.
So.
No, you know, that's completely true, right? Like, you know, for example, think about it this way, right? I mean, if somebody handed me, right, as, you know, a 14-year-old, you know, $50 million, $100 million, $1 billion, it would probably not be spent in the most effective way.
Right.
I think that, you know, exactly. So, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, right, with money, you have a lot of responsibility. So I think it's like that, right? I mean, I think you can't just, you know, hand over money. But I think that, you know, you have to, you know, you have to educate, you know, the people who you hand over your money to in a very effective and wise way and not exactly by, you know, the textbook, right? So, I mean, I think that it's important that, you know, you keep money, you know, set aside or, you know, majority of your money. I think that it's more important that, you know, you don't tell them, you know, especially when they're young and you start educating them when they start becoming, you know, older and, you know, tend to understand how business and how money and, you know, the finances work. So that's what I think.
Yeah, excellent. So AIT, I definitely know where – I have a good idea where you're at now with it. Where are you looking to go in the next few years, 5 years or even 10 years?
Ah, yeah, absolutely, yeah. So the first the first goal is to graduate from this madness. And then after I'm out of this hellhole, I plan on expanding, you know, pretty rapidly. You know, since we've been, you know, the truth of the matter is we're four years behind, right? Our goal, right? Because if you really think about it, I'm, you know, in college for 4 years, right? So
yeah.
If I started this company, you know, when I was not in college, you know, we'd be at a whole different place right now, right? So I kind of look at it as 4 years behind, and that's actually a good thing because it keeps me on my feet, right? I think of, oh my God, we're behind. How are we going to do this? How are we going to do this? So it's a good thing, right? So what we're going to do, you know, after I graduate is we're going to do two things, right? So currently we're in the staffing business, right, where we're staffing different types of resources, right? We're going to continue to expand that business by hiring as many recruiters as we can, right? That's going to be the way of scaling, right? So, for example, every recruiter is going to be required to bring in X amount of dollars of business every year, right, or every quarter. And if they're not doing that, they have to get out, right, because they're wasting time, right? So that's going to be the first step, right? And then the goal is to hire as many recruiters as fast as possible. So we're growing and we're scaling the business. And the second side of the business, which most people would not expect, but is going to be to open up retail side of the business as well. So the retail side of the business is going to offer, like, you know, smartphone and, like, you know, wearable technology and, like, you know, computer repair services, right? So, you know, all different types of customers are going to be able to go into their local, you know, repair store, and they're going to be able to, you know, get our services so they can, you know, get their technology repaired, their, you know, or, you know, buy, you know, different types of accessories or so on and so forth, right? And the real goal and the real vision, right, is to kind of have a Starbucks version of that, just not as, you know, or as many of them, right? So, for example, you know, there's a Starbucks, right, on every corner of New York City, right? Our goal is not to have, you know, a AIT location on every corner of New York City.
Right.
Our goal is to have, you know, as many as locations as Starbucks do, but just as more spread out, so that way the demand is staying high, right? So that's kind of what we're aiming to do. We're looking to become the next Starbucks, I guess, is the right way to put it, of AIT, pretty much. So, you know, have as many locations as possible, not only throughout the United States, but also expand to other countries as well, as an international company. And that goes the same for our staffing side as well. So just to kind of give you a brief background about where we are today. Currently, we work with, you know, startups that are well-funded. We work with mid-sized companies, and we also work with large Fortune 500 companies as well. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, something I really, really do enjoy, because, you know, it's really different, right, when you work with a startup or when you work with a Fortune 500 company, right? So it's definitely a great experience, and it's definitely been a very interesting ride so far.
Yeah, I could see. It's funny how, like, you think a bigger company might be more powerful, but a lot of times they're less agile than than a smaller business.
Definitely, yep. And it's actually also really interesting because, you know, with working with larger clients, not only, you know, is there more money to be made, but, you know, also the thing is that, you know, you spend less time, right? And it's actually really surprising because most people think when you work with large companies, you know, you spend more time, right? But the thing is that, you know, these large companies know exactly what they want, and they're very clear and they're very precise in what they want, right? Versus when you work with smaller clients, it's a whole different ballgame. So it's definitely, you know, very interesting. But, you know, it's really great because, you know, we get to work with a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of, you know, CEOs that are still starting out, right? And that are, you know, well-funded, you know, but still not, you know, a billion-dollar company yet. So it's definitely very interesting to see that as well. And it definitely keeps us, you know, going forward as well, to try to see, you know, the different strategies and the different things that they're doing. And that's definitely very, very, fulfilling.
Yeah. What are some of the brands that you admire or love?
Brands on which side? The startup side or like the large Fortune 500 side?
Ones that, you know, are commonplace
brands. I'm sure you've heard of Fitbit.
No. What is it?
You haven't. Fitbit. F-I-T-Bit.
Oh, Fitbit. Yes.
So, you know, I think that they're definitely doing some, you know, really, really cool things. You know, so, you know, I think wearable technology is, you know, one of the, you know, definitely is the way of the future. I think that, you know, there's going to be a lot of things that are going to come out over the next, you know, 3-4 years. And I think that that's why, you know, our retail side of the business is also going to do well, right? Because if you think about it, right? I mean, not Fitbit necessarily, but, you know, other wearable technologies, they're going to break, right? Every technology breaks at some point in their lifespan, right? So I think that, you know, having a center where, you know, you can go into, and whether it's the newest, you know, wearable technology, or if it's, you know, if it's still your desktop, you know, in your parents' house, you can still take that technology into our, you know, locations, and you can have that, you know, repaired. So I think that that's what definitely the way of the future is. So that's kind of why I'm excited about our retail strategy, in addition to our staffing side of the business.
Yeah, I think with once the Apple Watch gets going, I think that could take – that has the potential to take off.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
I think
definitely. Apple will do it right.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And, you know, that's definitely – you know, that's where we're headed. And, you know, we definitely, you know, it's really important that, you know, we definitely move as fast as possible as a technology company. And it's definitely important to us that, you know, we're opening as many locations as fast as possible. And, you know, we're, you know, staffing as many, you know, resources, right, as fast as possible, just like any business would have a goal. But, you know, for us, it's really important that, you know, we bring a lot of value to our customers, whether it's on the retail side or whether it's on the staffing side. It's just, I think that especially in the business that, you know, I'm in, I think it's really, like, you know, there's no proprietary way of differentiating yourself. So I think it's really the company that brings the most value, right, outside of, you know, the pitching side, you know, tends to win, you know, in the end. So that's kind of what we look at and focusing on, you know, by working with different types of companies.
Sure. So I think I got an answer to this question, but I'll ask it anyway because it maybe will be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. What motivates you to do what you do, Amit?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, I think it's a couple of things, right? So when I was really young, you know, people really saw me as, you know, somebody who's, you know, going to graduate and maybe get, you know, a okay job, right? Not even forget about, you know, getting a job at, like, you know, a large company, right? Or even going to college, right? Forget about that. That was the whole crazy picture. So I think that the want and desire to prove people wrong, I think that's definitely that's been a huge factor. And I think just the, you know, just the simple reason of wanting to succeed in life and, you know, wanting to make wanting to make something out of myself and, you know, wanting to be somebody who, you know, has contributed to, you know, significantly to the technology community. I think, you know, I mean, technology has just been a passion, you know, as explained, you know, with the things I did, you know, from a younger age. But I think, you know, I mean, I'm just a very competitive person when it comes to business. So I think that of, you know, wanting to succeed and, you know, failure is not an option. You know, just that simple thing, it just really drives me and, you know, gets me up in the morning.
Yeah, and technology is not going anywhere.
Absolutely, yeah, it's not. So yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, I think that's just, you know, for that simple reason. I mean, you know, and it's wanting, I mean, you know, I mean, I know what our revenue has been this year and, you know, wanting to increase that. I mean, you know, this year we've been very fortunate to be able to increase our revenue by 4 times. And, you know, next year is looking at another whole, you know, 5x increase. So, you know, it's definitely nice. Very, 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 you know, exciting to be in a fast paced business that's, you know, definitely helping a lot of companies. So, you know, that kind of thing is what really drives me. And, you know, the want and the desire to succeed is, I guess, in a sentence.
Have you heard of, his name's Dane Maxwell. He has a company called The Foundation, where he basically helps people build a software company by kind of outsourcing to companies like you. But they have the idea, and like he does what I think you do. Have you heard of this at all? It's called The Foundation.
I actually haven't heard of him.
Yeah, so he started by kind of going to, I think he had a uncle or his dad was in real estate, and he went to a real estate meeting, and they were having problems recruiting real estate agents. And he said, well, how much does it cost you, or how much, you know, what do you gain a year for, you know, getting a real estate agent? And they said, well, it'd be about $10,000 per agent. And he said, well, what if I could build a software program that would get you, you know, X number of people? Would you pay this much per month to, you know, do that? And he basically pre-sold the software. So the money was half up front, and then built the software and then sold it on a monthly subscription. Like, I think is a great business model, because yes, you're going to have maintenance and bugs to work out, but you're also going to have recurring revenue, which I think is that what you do? You get software as a service, they pay projects, or they pay monthly, or is it a mix?
Okay, you actually just faded out a little bit. Can you repeat that one more time? The Wi-Fi actually just went out, so I wasn't able to hear that.
Okay, I think you just sent me a message too.
Yeah, I did, yep. But that was outside of that. Can you repeat the question one more time?
Yeah, I asked if you do software as a service, where do they pay a upfront package for a software application or program, or do they pay for it and then pay monthly residuals to run the software?
Yeah, so exactly. Like, you know, so from what it sounds like what you were referring to before is, like, you know, so, like, that's kind of like a platform-based, like, you know, web application, right? So for those kind of services, like, you know, there is usually a subscription, like, you know, model, right? But what we do is a little different, actually. I mean, you know, we're a software development firm, right? So we do, like, you know, resource allocation. So we charge our customers for the development, right? Or the time that our, you know, resources are spending on, you know, their project, right? Whatever type of project it is. So we bill at an hourly rate, right? So our hourly rate usually, you know, is from like $80 to like, you know, $200 an hour, depending on the type of technology or the type of resource, you know, we're allocating, right? So what we do is, you know, we just bill at an hourly rate. And when we sign a contract with any client, right, we usually take, like, you know, a percentage. So for example, like, you know, if it's like, you know, a 6-month project, right, then, like, you know, what we'll do is, you know, for the first month, right, we'll take X amount of dollars, right, of whatever the cost will be for the first year to the client, and we'll use that as a deposit, right? And then what we do is we credit that, you know, deposit, right, back to the customer towards, you know, the bill.
Right.
And that's just a way for us, you know, securing the client, knowing that, you know, they're serious about it and committed to the project as we are, right?
Right.
So that's what we do. And then we just bill clients usually, you know, biweekly or weekly or monthly, right, depending on the size of the client and what the client is looking to do.
Right.
But after the project is done, you know, usually, you know, we go into our projects with them as they're interested in building further relationships with us and as we are. But we don't, you know, we don't charge, you know, after the development is done because, you know, our goal is to help them build, you know, great products or, you know, give them the best resources they need. It's not to necessarily make money off their products.
Right. So I remember reading you when you first year of business, you gave some donations. Can you talk about that?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So in the first year, you know, when we were in business, we actually, you know, I was really reflecting as, you know, how I've been able to reach, you know, the point that I had reached, right? So the amount of money we did in revenue was significantly small, right? But it wasn't really just so much about the money that I was, you know, really thankful for. I was really thankful, you know, for the, you know, amount I had learned that year, right? Just because of, you know, of the, you know, of being in business, right? There was so much that, you know, you learn in the first year. So that's what I was really happy about. And I was just really happy and excited for the next year because I knew that with that knowledge I had and the ability to strategize and, you know, brainstorm and, you know, come up with creative ideas, I knew, you know, I could do well the following year. And that actually turned out to be well, thank God, right? You know, I actually made a donation, right, to a doctor at Johns Hopkins, right? So I interviewed a couple of different doctors and, you know, I made a donation to Dr. Nilfarazad. And I donated about a little over $1,000, right? And that was actually a lot of money then because, you know, our revenue was really small. So it was kind of like half of what we made in that year.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was actually, you know, really interesting because, you know, for me, it wasn't just about, you know, making the contribution to a, you know, doctor that is leading in a, you know, colon cancer clinical trial. But for me, it was a way of, you know, kind of thanking my grandfather because he was kind of one of the few people who really believed in me when I was really young. And, you know, my parents would always yell at me, oh, you know, why aren't you doing your homework? But, you know, my grandfather was really somebody who was like, you know, don't worry, you know, he's going to be all right. And, like, you know, that kind of thing. So it was actually really interesting because, you know, most people didn't see it that way. And he was kind of one of the people, you know, who did view me as somebody who would succeed in life. And, you know, I'm just really thankful for that. And I really contribute, you know, a lot of my, you know, success to that, right? So for me, when I donated the money, it wasn't about, oh my God, I only made, you know, $3,000 or whatever it was, right? And I'm only donating, you know, a little over $1,000, right? So I wasn't worried about losing money because, you know, I feel that money will follow, right? I'm not worried so much about money, right? And I just really felt, you know, it was a great thing that I can do to kind of fuel his memory and just to make his, you know, legacy go on, right? So, you know, sure, that $1,000, you know, it won't find a cure for cancer, but I think it's definitely a starting point.
Yeah.
And, you know, as my, you know, company grows, and, you know, once, you know, we are reaching, like, you know, 50, 60, you know, $100 million mark, and, you know, even larger than that, you know, I would definitely like to increase the, you know, the size of my donation because I do feel that, you know, money can definitely, you know, make a huge contribution towards, you know, finding a cure. And it's really important to me that, you know, a cure is found for colon cancer as that's what my grandfather passed away from.
Well, that's awesome. That's a great story.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
And I think the ability to give to causes is something that is more definitely more powerful than receiving.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, as businesses, right? Businesses, you know, sure, you know, they're looking to make money, but I mean, the way I look at it, right, is, you know, you kind of have a responsibility, right? Not when you're so much when you're a small company, right? But when you are definitely, you know, growing into, like, you know, a $600 million company or a $1 billion company, right? You really have that, you know, responsibility to make sure that the, you know, that the people, right, of you know, your country are, you know, having what they need. And I think it's really important for, you know, philanthropy to take place.
Definitely. Do you have a favorite quote you'd like to share?
A favorite quote? Yeah, sure. I guess it would be, you know, in life, you know, don't be the chess piece, be the one moving the chess piece, right? So meaning that, you know, you don't necessarily want to be the guy who's working. You want to be the guy that's directing a group of people.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah.
And do you have a favorite book or author?
I actually don't. I actually really don't read that much.
Nice.
I mean,
I like that.
Yeah, I really don't. I mean, you know, if I was to give you a name, it really would be because you were asking me the question. But I'll be honest, I really don't read that much.
All right. Then I'm going to ask, where can we find you online?
Yeah, of course.
If someone wanted to bounce some questions off to you or
sure.
They have a business idea they want to run by you?
Yeah, absolutely. So our website, you can definitely visit our website. That's a great place to definitely learn a little bit more about what we do as a company. And also you can reach out to us through the contact form. Our website is www.theaitsolution.com. So it's www.theaitsolution.com.
Excellent. And what about on social media?
Twitter? Yeah, you can definitely. Yep. Our Facebook is AIT International, and our Twitter is AIT, I believe.
No biggie. They'll be able to find it with a
search. They'll find us.
Yeah,
yep.
if they know how to use Google, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, thanks for being on the show. I really appreciate it, and I think this is a really – you've got a real great story. And if you got a few minutes, I'd like to keep you on the line and just kind of pick your brain on some of the stuff I've got going on.
Oh, yeah, of course. It's my pleasure.
So, thanks.
Yes, my pleasure. Thanks so much for the interview.
Again, that was Amit Shah from theaitsolution.com. I really hope you enjoyed this episode, and I'm just kind of in awe with this kid. I enjoyed speaking with him and getting some good advice from a young guy. And, you know, we did get a little maybe anti-education, but I kind of want to be clear that, you know, education has a purpose and you get out what you put in, you know. We're not dissing it, but there's definitely a change coming, I think. And the more we're involved, the more we can help create the change that we want it to be. So please like, share, and review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. Have a good one. Thanks.